All right, welcome to the Let's Get It podcast. I'm your host, Justin Spaulding. Joel Wallace, running the computers. Mike, setting it up. Merry, Merry Christmas. You're probably listening to this. It's either the day before Christmas Eve, maybe you're listening on Christmas Eve, on Christmas Day. If so, thanks for spending your Christmas Day with us, Christmas Eve with us. And maybe it's after Christmas, but either way, Merry, Merry Christmas to you. Joel, do you guys have Christmas trees, Christmas tree up and presents under the tree yet?
Tree up with the little dogs, definitely nothing underneath the tree.
Your dogs go after them too?
They would 100%.
Dachshund? You have a dachshund, right?
We have a dachshund now.
I think your wife hooked on the dachshund,
yes.
Didn't she?
Yes.
one dachshund doesn't really care about the presents that we have. The other dachshund, though, you leave her alone in the house, she will open every present. Yeah, I mean, you say the word present and she knows. It's just like you say ball, 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 or treat, treat, treat. You say the word present, you bring the tree in, she knows what's going on. She's looking forward to it. She's sniffing all the boxes. And she gets more and more excited every single day that passes as there's presents under the tree. So we can relate to that. Whenever we're gone, it's like you got to lock them up because she'll leave a mess.
This week we bought gates to like block off the whole living room area so that it can't even get into where the tree is.
See, Reese, our dog Reese would climb probably that little.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's nuts. She's crazy. We used to have this little fence in the backyard at the old house we had, the other lake house that we rented. And that's when she was a little puppy. And we were probably only in that house for, she was 10 months when we moved out of that house. So she was young, but she would climb over the fence. She would climb over it. And I was only like 3.5 feet being a puppy wiener dog. We thought, oh, that's plenty. But she was like on that thing, scaling it and would jump off. And like, you're crazy. So no fence. Like, we got to make sure they're locked up if we're not home.
Oh my gosh, that's too funny.
So, and other sad, tragic news in the Madison area, Abundant Life, Christian school had a shooting the other day, which, you know, our thoughts and prayers, I have comments and thoughts on that whole thing, but I'm not sharing them right now. I think first and foremost, I can't imagine, you know, my kid or a relative working there, you know, whatever, being involved in that and the feelings they must get, especially when it hits so close to home. I mean, Abundant Life is, it's about 9 miles north of where we're sitting right now shooting the podcast. It is 7 miles north of where I live, and it's about 4 miles north of Jamie's first dental practice that she bought there in McFarland. So, I mean, it's really close to home. We know people that, you know, we know someone that was a first responder. We know other people that are, you know those families that were directly affected. And so our thoughts and prayers are going out to them. And Joel, it's pretty close to where you work too over there, I think, right? I mean, you guys are probably only, 3 or 4 miles north of that maybe?
Yeah, I had a few people that got stuck in traffic with all that going on.
Yeah, so a gal that works with our family, she, her dad was one of the first responders, and, you know, and when he does that stuff, he always sends a text saying, hey, we love you, you know, I love you guys, and they never know what's up, and then 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, they'll see it on TV, and then they can't get a hold of them for a while, and you're like, oh, man, and so it's just, it's, you know, obviously it's today's day and age, for whatever reason, it seems like this problem is happening all the time, and, but then when it actually hits really close to home too, it's even more of a, it hits you a little bit differently, I think. So you hug your kids a little, you squeeze your kids a little more, you know, the night after that and the time after that, because you're grateful that they weren't one of the three that were, I believe it was three that total that died and numerous injured. So thoughts and prayers.
It's crazy. I know that's for us. We had an incident at our school last year where there was a threat, and that was it. But even that enough.
Janesville schools?
That would be Judah. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Tiny thing. Everything's in one building.
Yeah.
But even just that alone was enough for us, and that's a big reason why we are homeschooling this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't control it.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been other with our daughter. I mean, there's been other threats and stuff here in Stoughton and stuff that have happened, you know, which, again, that's kind of common. Unfortunately, it's common that happens now. But so there's been days where there's been threats and whatever. But, you know, for this to actually go down, I guess yesterday, too, there was threats up in Green Bay. So
they
didn't even know if that was like related at first, which obviously I don't think, you know, now, you know, it is. But apparently there's some threats in Green. And then last night they found a gun in the middle of a parking lot in the Monona Grove High School. Some felon was riding a bike through the school, and supposedly a 9mm popped out of his pocket, and there's a basketball game going on. So that guy got arrested right away and whatnot. Wasn't supposed to have a firearm because he's a felony, but
let alone on school
grounds.
Either way,
riding his bike through. So,
oh my gosh.
So, anyways, yeah, thoughts and prayers to the people affected. That one's really, really close to home. But then, on to some other news. Really, what we wanted to do today was take some time with you around the holiday and talk about some news items that I thought were kind of interesting here regarding real estate. So we got, talking about multifamily starts and how they're down. We're going to talk about the aging housing stock in America. There's a Chicago office building that just sold for $63 million, which was a huge, huge discount. Stick around to see how much of a discount it was. This group is trying to pick this building up for. Talk a little bit about our creative deal that we are closing here. The last deal of 2024 that we're buying, we're closing that deal December 23rd, which we're shooting this thing. And it's December 17th that we're shooting this podcast right now. So in 6 days, by the time you're listening to this, we'll have closed on that deal. So we're going to kind of break down that deal a little bit, talk about it, how creative it was, as I've never done a deal. The way that we structure this one, I've never structured that way. So hang around if you want to hear about that. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about what I do to prep for a new year, as this year, 2024, is already, it's every year it goes by faster and faster. And we sit here and say, man, every year goes faster and faster, but here we are in December again. So we're going to talk a lot about what we do, what I do with my finances, businesses, to prep, closing down a new year and to prep for that new year to be able to have explosive growth and be able to do what we do. That being said, let's jump into the first thing, multifamily starts. And this is something that I kind of talked about a long time ago when rates started going up. And actually, when rates started going up, we still bought 1,000 units that year. And people are like, well, why are you doing this? How are you doing this? Because a lot of people just went to the sideline right when rates started ticking up. And my whole mindset was, look, I wanted to be able to buy deals as long as I could. I really, we kept buying deals too over the last couple of years while rates have been up. And the main reason why is because I knew at some point there was so much construction that started when rates were low. It was like record starts for a couple of years in a row there. And then, but then I knew when rates went up, I knew how hard it was going to be to pencil out new projects, new construction projects. And so therefore I knew once that wave of big supply came on and the record level supply, once that was fully constructed, it was open, ready for occupancy. Once those filled up, I knew the starts would slow down. There wouldn't be as many new, construction units coming online, and therefore if supply is down, what's going to happen? Well, demand is going to go up, pricing is going to go up. So now we're starting to really see that where, starts now are, depending on the market, they're down anywhere between 40 to 80% plus, depending on the market, which market you might be living in, or looking to buy real estate in. And so again, when you look at that, what that means for, and I've been saying this for a long time now, what it's going to mean for 2026, and it's becoming really apparent what's going to happen come 2026, because when the rest of these, open up, they get stabilized, they have the occupants where they need to be, that supply dries up, there's still going to be the demand out there. And so therefore, there's going to be huge rent increases, I think, that are coming in 2026, 2027. And therefore, with big rent increases, therefore your NOI should be growing, which your net operating income is your NOI, and your NOI is what really drives the property value. And so when the NOI goes up and that property value goes up, and there's just less in that moment too. Like, I think apartments for a little while now have been like, you've been looking at Bitcoin, like apartments for a while in 2020, 2021, 2022, they were all the rage. And now people have just been quiet about them. I feel like they're going to be all the rage again. And so what you're going to see too is cap rates are going to get compressed and people are going to pay a little bit more for each dollar of net operating income that's there as well, because of how aggressive I think it's going to get. And again, I've been saying this, you can find a lot of our content. I've been saying this for a few years now, that's what's going to happen in 2026, 2027. And in my mind, we're getting closer and closer to that with all the articles and stuff that I'm reading. So something to keep in mind, again, I think when I'm in this, being in this game for 10 or 12 years, I've kind of seen some of the ebbs and flows in the market. And I've come to understand that I'm never trying to time the market. I'm never trying to buy when it's low. I want to consistently buy, because through these ebbs and flows, I've just seen that if you consistently buy on the ebb, there's going to still be a good reason of why you should own real estate. And on the flow of the ebb and flow, there's still going to be a good reason why you should own real estate. And so the best time to invest is always today. Well, actually, the best time to invest is what they say is yesterday. And the second best time is today. I'm a firm believer in that. So I just want to consistently be investing. I don't want to actually try to time the market. Because the odds are you're not going to time it perfectly and you're just going to miss out on some of these great opportunities. And so right now I'm still trying to buy as much real estate as possible because I know it's coming in 2026 and 2027 with these starts, you know, decreasing. But I also know what's coming with the pricing and the valuations on them as well. And so if I can get deals to work right now with rates being higher, and if rates also come down, that's going to drive the pricing as well. Right. So there's a lot of good reasons to be buying. I don't think a lot of people will mention that, but you know, the true real estate players will say the same thing that I'm saying right now about the multifamily starts and that whole sector. So I'm kind of talking about multifamily starts, and that's kind of the new construction end. I was reading a interesting thing a little while ago about the aging rental stock that's going to require reinvestment across America. And so I'll just read this excerpt real quick, but it says, and this was the Joint Center for Housing Studies of Harvard University. So I know I read a lot of stuff, right? Because I want to know what's out there. I don't necessarily just roll with one article, right? I mean, this goes back to the whole statistics thing, and never really been. I like statistics, but I don't just go off of. I also take it with a grain of salt, and that's been forever. But then what really made me double down on that is during COVID and what we saw with statistics during that. And so I take all statistics with a grain of salt. I take all articles with a grain of salt. But I try to read as much as I can and just be aware of as much as I can so that I can then deploy it out into the marketplace. Anyways, the Harvard had this to say about the aging rental stock, and I quote, "The rental stock is older than it has ever been. The median age was 44 years in 2021, up from 34 years 2 decades ago. Although building construction standards and repairs to existing units have helped to minimize the problem of structural inadequacy, a large number of rental units still fall short of baseline habitability and safety. Nearly 4 million renter households live in physically inadequate units with problems such as structural deficiencies, a lack of upkeep, or inconsistent provision of basic features like electricity, hot and cold running water, or heat. Even among units that meet the criteria for physical adequacy, many still have significant unmet repair needs. The Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia estimated in 2023 that it would cost $51.5 billion to address the physical deficiencies of the occupied rental stock." Joel, that's good for your business too, being in the you know, that little niche there where you guys are rehabbing and selling material and supplies and whatnot. That's obviously a good article for you. And you know, this is a great, I wanted to follow up the multifamily housing starts being down with this article saying, look, there's a lot of opportunity out there for the people that are creative and can do this type of work. Now, that's the struggle is actually getting and doing that work. Like, you got to be able to follow through on your plan. There was a while in our company around 2020, 2021, I didn't take on heavy value adds because I knew we weren't fast enough at doing new cabinets. We've gotten to be a lot faster. We can do those in about 3 to 5 days. Now we can do a full unit. And so I'm willing to take on more and more, right? And as we get more and more experienced around here, I'm willing to take on more and more like structural problems, right? Which is another thing that we don't really try to take on too many huge, huge, significant structural problems. But like, you know, we get our company to the right point. And as we keep growing, I'm willing to take on more and more. Now, you know, what's interesting is if it does get to be a bad enough situation, you're probably starting to look at, I wonder at what point in time government subsidies are going to really kick in to be able to, you know, they're already doing it through TIF and through different things on new construction, but at what point are they going to start giving more incentives for things other than just like office buildings or, you know, schools, because there's those things out there to convert them into apartments. But what about just straight up a old beat up apartment building and a subsidy to be able to go in and do that and see more subsidy? You see them sometimes, and you see it through like WEDA, and which is, you know, housing development and housing authority and stuff like that. And there's different local areas that local organizations that'll give money and stuff sometimes. But at what point will, you know, there be more federal money out there or more government money out there to do more of these more of these projects. I don't know, but you got to think that that's definitely coming.
Right.
So, you know, you look at, again, multifamily starts being down. The cool thing is like, you know, this deal I'm going to talk about here in a little bit, for those of you guys that stick around, this creative deal that we did, we're buying that. It's a townhome deal, attached to garage, in unit washer dryer. They're about 1,150-ish square feet on average. You know, we're buying it for $130,000. But just like this article says, it's really, they're beat up, right? I mean, the current owner, they're the ones that initially developed them, so they've pulled their money out and then some, and you know, they've had the cash flow for a long time, and so the buildings are tired. But we're going to go put in about $30,000 per unit. So now our all-in costs is, you know, between with closing costs and everything added in there, we're about $168,000 to $170,000 per door. But to build these new, you're probably $240,000 to $250,000. I mean, and that probably doesn't even include your soft costs and buying the site. So when you look at, you know, this aging stock, if you can, you know, get into it, there's a lot of opportunity to go out and be able to turn these properties around. And you should start doing it now, because when government subsidies come around, it'll just make it more accessible for everybody. And again, what happens then is there's more demand. So try to get in, try to become an expert before all that stuff goes on, because there's going to be a lot of opportunity there. What percentage of your guys' business, Joel, is it all apartments? Or you guys do office too and everything? Or
very, very few. I'd say 98% is all multifamily. Brand new.
You're doing brand new. Okay.
Yep. Yeah,
just share with, so people have context, what your company does. Mm-hmm. Quick.
So I work for a company out of Madison, and we are a labor-driven company at this point. So we don't do the general contracting. Yeah. We're kind of the sub. So we do anything from the finishes, cabinets, trim, countertops, supply.
You do install the labor, and then you're also starting to provide the product now too, or yep. Not yet?
So we've always supplied the countertops.
Gotcha.
Quartz and granite.
Yeah.
We're working on an acquisition that'll open us up to be able to do solid surface,
yeah,
PLAM, open up a whole different level of cabinets from the supply side.
Yeah.
We're looking at eventually getting into supplying the millwork, doors, case base, trim, all of that. And then we do framing as well.
Got it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's... You know, you
and guys, flooring.
Yep.
Whole
thing. So, I mean, companies that can go out and do this is just going to continue to be more and more and more opportunity out there. And so if you're wondering if you should get started in real estate now or not, yes, now, like yesterday, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, don't wait. Get involved and become an expert in the space, because if you can become an expert in the space, you're going to position yourself over these next 2 to 5 years when things pick up again, and you're going to be able to position yourself to, you know, reap a lot of benefit from that. Moving on to the Chicago office building. I was reading this article on CoStar. We got a CoStar subscription around here, and they always have some really good articles. And this one's hot off the press today, but there's an investor that is under contract to buy a 30-story office tower in downtown Chicago. It's a Wacker Drive, I believe. Which is 303 East Wacker Drive. It's 944,000 square feet. It's a prime address. I mean, you're talking right downtown Chicago, where everybody wants to be. And they're picking it up for about $63 million. Now get this, right? This is December 17, 2024. In 2018, a Boston-based company bought it for $182 million, right? So they're picking it up for about a third what that company picked it up for. The back in 2018, when the Boston-based company picked up for $182 million, Bank of America provided a loan at that time that was $156 million. So I think they're a little upside down, right? So that's just an interesting thing. Of, you know, we don't do too much office around here. I'm not going to pretend to be an office expert. I'm not an office expert. Don't do any of it. But I've really been keeping up on this, because it could just have big implications depending on what happens across all of commercial real estate, including apartments, and more than anything, not necessarily messing with the fundamentals of apartments, but messing with the debt and the ability to get debt and financing when needed. So it's still good for us to pay attention to it. But when you look at that, I mean, that's the, you know, they're picking it up for 33 cents on a dollar. right? You're looking at Sam Zell. If you've ever read that, if people have read Sam Zell's book, I can't think of the name of it right now, but they called him the grave dancer because that's what he would do. He'd go around and pick up things for 10 cents on the dollar, 30 cents on the dollar when people are panicking. This article also goes on to talk about how there's a $10 billion portfolio of office buildings, and Floyd Mayweather is a big investor in it. And so you're starting to see these groups that are putting together these bigger funds for these office buildings, and I think waiting for the right moment to strike. And now the sellers of this, you know, I don't know. I mean, if they bought it in 2018, right? I mean, that could be a 7-year loan maybe they had on it, maybe a 10-year loan. I don't know. I think there's more to the story here that's maybe not in the article. But yeah, I mean, it looks like the occupancy of the building has gone down from like 95% down to 77%. So, you know, COVID and the whole way things are right now, you know, it's changed. But then you got, you know, Elon and Vivek talking about no more working at home for the government. And, you know, you start to see more businesses go back to get back to the office. So, you know, picking this building up for 33 cents on the dollar, I think, you know, sometime between 5 to 10, 15, 20 years from now, you probably look and this building will probably be a $250 million building at some point. Oh, yeah. These people are going to make a killing if they can hold on long enough. So it doesn't say what they're doing for, I mean, again, it's just under contract, so it could fall apart. But
so does it look like they're going to keep it as apartment or as
that's
as office?
Who knows? I think there's a lot that that's not said here.
Yeah.
And the property's just under contract. So, you know, and I've done enough with CoStar, and I'm in CoStar enough where I know sometimes they get details wrong too, right? Sure. So I taking stuff with a grain of salt because you don't know that when you're an outsider, but then when you actually see your deals on there and they're talking about your deals and it's like, well, wait, that price is wrong.
Right.
That stat is wrong. It doesn't say anything in here about flipping it over to apartments or anything, sure. Which I think is a bigger, you know, I think there's a lot of people that make that seem like it's going to be a really easy thing. I mean, I think maybe 10 to 25% maybe of the office buildings out there would even work for apartments just with how it's set up. Because I mean, you know, there's so many of those office buildings that the footprint, you're not able to get as much daylight for
just
living
utilities
spaces.
Utilities too. Yeah. There's so many logistics in that.
A lot of it. Where a lot of them, that's like the subsidies that would have to be given by the government just wouldn't even make sense either. Right. Where you're better off, you know, someone's going to be better off tearing down some of these buildings if it gets that bad. So, I think, and again, I don't know, this is what, 30 stories, and it was, so you're at 30,000 square foot per floor. So, and I don't know the footprint and whatnot, but just looking at it again, like there's gotta be so much in the center that I don't know how you, and I don't know if this would even be a candidate, but it's not what I do.
Nope.
I just look at them like, I think it was such a big thing a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I think you're hearing of it less and less. I think some groups maybe went down. We went down the route with another company over in Milwaukee looking at a property, and that we ran into the same problem. It was a utility problem.
Yep.
It was a facade problem because the building was built in the 70s and it was just, you know, the whole facade needed to be redone. And then same thing. It's like you can only go so deep with the apartments before you lose natural light, which not a lot of people don't want to live in something like that, right? And like I said, the utility problem. And so by the time you're going through and we ended up losing the bid, it went to someone else. We all said there's no way they're going to actually make this happen at that price, and they didn't. So the building never actually. I don't think that building ever actually ended up selling.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that's a harder thing than a lot of people initially thought.
Oh, yeah.
Just because all the logistics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much that goes into the consideration. And even from a code standpoint, again, like people don't think about natural light.
Yeah. When we got to the point where like we're looking at it, it's like we're like our return
just doesn't,
it doesn't meet the risk profile because it's more risk, is like there's so many more things that could go wrong because it's not something that you're doing all the time,
right?
And so when we were looking at it, like we're really not going to get paid much more here than just doing our standard apartment deal. Why would we take the extra risk? We would want us to have some type of risk adjusted you know, return for that. So but anyway, interesting. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this whole office space and the looming pile of debt that, you know, I mean, each year that passes now, there's people that were in 3-year terms, 5-year terms, 7-year terms, and each year that passes and their occupancy is down and they get closer to the expiration of their debt where they got to put new debt on, that's when it becomes a big, big problem. I mean, obviously the cash flow problems, if you go from 95% to 77%, I mean, that sounds like what the problem might be here, but like you know, that's a problem, obviously, when you're short on cash flow. But then when that note comes due, you know, $150 million note or whatever it was, right? And you got that note coming due and the building's really only worth $60, $80 million now. What are you going to do? Where's that money coming from? Because you're having to either just, you know, a lot of people are just going to turn it back over to the banks because they're not just going to come up with $60 million to put down in the building that is going sideways or going down. So it's an equity... establishing a new basis, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
Establish some new basis with a lower price, and it's wiping out a lot of equity. Resetting the equity, I guess, is what I was looking for.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
So, talking about this new creative deal real quick. So it's our last deal of 2024. It's a 64-unit deal. I've never done a deal this way before. There's a lot of deals that are kind of done this way in senior housing. So we're kind of doing it different. I'm not going to share all the details, but it just kind of worked out where this was the structure that worked for the seller and us as the buyer for a few different unique reasons. And so really it's 64 units. There's 8 different parcels. They're all contiguous parcels. They're all next to each other. Each parcel has one building. Each building is 8 units. They're all townhomes. So there's no common area space. It's all private entry, detached garage. And so really what we're doing is on December 23rd, we're buying 2 of the buildings, but then we got a master lease in place for the other 6 buildings. And so, I have a entity that's going to be, you know, have the master lease, and then they'll have Spalding Group be the property manager. And then the 2 that we buy is a separate entity, and Spalding Group will also be the property manager. The bank's going to give us a loan, to do some of the CapEx and for the property of the 2 that we're buying. The seller, we just pay a lease payment to. He's going to keep the debt. He has a small amount of debt on the property. He's going to keep the debt that he has. We're going to pay him a lease fee. It's a fee per building. And then we have in that master lease, we have an option to buy the other 6 buildings over a 2-year time period. It's actually 1 year. And then we have we can exercise an option to extend that for another year. So we get 2 years to buy the rest of it. I think we'll have all of it bought by the end of 2025 for sure. But it just kind of gives us a little bit extra runway. So yeah, we're going to start going in, and there's 5 vacants across the property. So buying it December 23rd, master leasing part of it December 23rd, we're going to start fixing up the whole property, whether it's the lease end of it or the part that we buy. We got 5 units that we're going to be able to get into and start they're vacant. We're going to start demoing these. We got guys lined up already on the day of closing going demo. We've got supplies ordered for those 5 units already, ready to, you know, turn this thing around fast. And hopefully we already have some rentable with the holidays. Might slow us down a little bit, but hopefully we'll have a couple rentable units already fully remodeled, new flooring, cabinets, countertops, lighting, paint, you know, all of it, come early mid-January. And then the other thing that we're going to do too is we're going to start doing remodels. We're going to start doing full remodels in occupied units as well. In this is going to be the first time. So it's our kind of a trial run at that. So we got somewhere between 3 to 5 units. Obviously the tenants that are living there have to, you know, give us, you know, access to do that and have to want to volunteer to basically do it. But the benefit to them is through the rest of their lease term, they're going to get a brand new remodeled unit for what the current rate that they're paying.
Right.
So there's some benefit there. And they could always, you know, obviously if they don't want to be there while we're doing it, they could elect to move out and move into one of our, you know, new units as well.
Yeah. I was going to ask if wait. How you were structured.
But like my whole mindset is, again, I want to be able to reposition, you know, the end goal is how can we reposition a 300 unit asset in 4 to 6 months, completely all of it. 100, you know, you go back to this article of, you know, the aging housing stock, how can we get in and remodel 100% of this thing in 4 to 6 months while still having cash flow, right? So our new thing is like, let's not go below 92 to 95% occupied while doing it, right? And so when you map that whole thing out and if you have bullet points of what all you need to be able to do, you know, you really got to be able to at some point get into occupied units and remodel them. Right. So, and there's companies that do this. I mean, you know, I don't think there's a ton of them. Right. And I think I told other people, they're like, you're going to do what? Like, yeah, we're going to start, you know, doing in-unit remodels, and it's pushing us out of our comfort zone a little bit. It's pushing our team out of our comfort zone. We're not expecting these first few to be smooth. No. Might have to give some gift cards or something to some residents that are unhappy out of it, but we're going to learn a lot and then adapt processes and then keep going from there. And, but you know, if we can master it, that puts us in a crazy position to be able to, you know, turn more of this aging housing stock,
right,
and dilapidated, tired housing stock around faster and faster. The faster we can turn it around, the faster we can rinse and repeat, because we can pull out our capital through a refinance,
right,
go do the next one, right?
So there's no time frame on your refi. It's just a matter of when you have enough equity kind of built in.
Yeah.
You can kind of go back and pull it.
Yeah, because we'll still have, it's not going to be floating rate debt or anything. Right. We'll have fixed debt on it. So we'll be able to go pull a second or refinance, whatever. Sure. Whatever makes more sense at that point in time. But, you know, if most people are trying to refi in 2 years, is really pretty quick for most people right now to refi. Mm-hmm. So if most people are doing it in 3 to 5 years, but if we can recycle capital, ultimately if we can get to a point where like we're done rehabbing in 4 to 6 years, we can stabilize it 4 to 6 months. We can stabilize it in 8 months.
Right.
We can refinance after 9 to 13 months. Like we're recycling our capital 3 to 5 times faster than anyone else. And when you map that out and see how fast that compounds over time, the numbers are staggering. Now, to have staggering numbers, you got to do staggering things, right? You got to do things that, again, push you out of your comfort zone. And so we're all going to be out of our comfort zone a little bit, but we're excited about it. And it's a good way to end 2024 with a bang, closing December 23rd on New Year's, on Christmas Eve, and be rocking and rolling in that deal.
So when you do your renos, is it a all or nothing kind of, like, do you always do all the units?
No, we have tiers. So we have bronze, silver, gold plus, diamond. We don't even have any diamond level property. We don't have any properties that we'd actually do diamond yet. It's a level that we haven't done yet and won't really try, but we've kind of identified that as a placeholder and have a vision for it. But, so it has different tiers. So these ones will be all gold plus level. So, you know, again, it's all the kitchen cabinets, countertops, flooring, lighting, paint, all new appliances. And then the exterior too comes spring. I mean, there'll be a lot going on exterior. Mm-hmm. It'll be, the siding's good. I mean, we'll have there'll be new windows. There's roofs that we need to do. There's, you know, a lot of landscaping things around there. There's a lot of concrete issues, blacktop issues, some drain tile issues that we got to fix and address.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So we got a property right now that we own. It's a smaller 18 unit, but we're doing, while the tenants are living there, we're doing all the bronze upgrades. So bronze is a lot smaller scale. So it's like light fixtures, outlets, you know, kind of anything that you can kind of like, it's not,
not as disruptive.
It's not as disruptive. Yeah. It's real quick. I mean, it's really easy. I mean, anyone could really, you know, do it, but we're just doing that to try to, you know, get, you know, but then we have two other properties right now we got an 88 unit that we just kicked off, a huge CapEx project going through. We're going to do 70 units, all new windows, all new doors. So that's going to be one. I think we're already started on like 5 to 7 units right now, but that's another one that we're going to pick up and start to, you know, test out the, you know, doing in-unit remodels.
So then is that a unit by unit basis or is that a property by property basis? Like, are you going to do bronze in, if I'm doing bronze, it's the whole building, or if I'm doing a gold, it's the whole building.
It kind of depends on what our business plan is with it.
Okay.
Right.
Per asset.
So like phase one, like, you know, like we bought another deal, 48 units a couple months ago, and phase one of that, which I just showed phase one being 5 years, it'll be a lot more compressed than that. But phase one, what I underwrote was we were going to do, it's 48 units. We did like something like 20 to 24 units at the gold standard. And then everything else at the bronze or silver, I can't remember. I have to go back and look. Mm-hmm. And obviously each one that we do, you know, it costs less, right? And it's less, but so it just worked from a business plan standpoint. Now, what I could see us doing is the 20 to 25 units that we're doing the 24, you know, the half the prop that we're doing the bronze to, I could see like a refi event or something like that. And then if it makes sense and like we're having a really good results on those gold units, we could easily take them from a bronze. We already took it to bronze. Now we could knock out the silver and get it to the gold as well. So so it's really property by property or just business. It's just what makes sense from a standpoint of when we're looking at the deal. There's another 96 unit that's going to be about, I think it's 60 to 70 units that are going to be gold. We're actually adding 3 units there in the common space because there's just extra space. We can get more three more. I think two more 3 bedrooms and 1 2-bedroom, I think. One more 2-bedroom. So it'll take it from 96 units up to 99 units. which we can add on those units for like $28,000 to $33,000 a unit.
A unit, yeah.
But when we're done, they're worth $105 a unit at the property level, right? So it's a 70, you know, we're adding $210,000 of property value just by adding those three units.
Right.
So, and then, but then the same thing there, the rest of those units will be a combination of bronze and gold based on the remaining budget. But it could be the same thing where, like, you know, we start crushing. It's like, okay, let's just, let's close the rest of the gap here and take it the rest of the way. So, yeah.
No, it makes sense.
This one that we're buying here at the end of the month, the plan, the budget is, you know, about 30 grand per door. And that's all 64 units going to gold. You know, now if something goes over, something unexpected happens, does that mean maybe we only get to 58 of the 64 gold? Yeah, maybe, but it'll get us in the right direction. So we'll be in a really good spot there.
And you're taking that, like you said, I mean, you're based out on a lease for the next, you know, to the end of the year, right?
Yeah, so it's a 12-month lease. And then on the portion that we're leasing, it's a 12-month lease. And then there's additional with like, give like a 30-day heads up or something. Hey, we're extending this lease another year, and therefore the option to buy is another year as well.
Right.
And while doing the lease, like we get all the revenue, right? So we get all the revenue coming in. We're in control of re-signing leases or increasing rents or, again, even remodeling units. We pay all the operating expenses. So we pay for my team's payroll. We pay the property management fee to Spalding Group. We pay the trash removal services, the lawn care, the snow removal, the real estate taxes, the insurance. The seller still has debt on those properties. It'll be a relatively small portion of debt compared to what the value of the property is. So then, but we won't pay the debt. He pays that.
Right.
We pay him a lease fee per building that we're still leasing. So the lease is broken down per building, because we can buy, like, the next round of buys, we could be two buildings. Gotcha. It could be four buildings. It could be the rest of them. I mean, it kind of depends. Like, I've got a good relationship with the guy. It's like whatever he kind of needs to make his thing happen, and whatever, we're going to work it out that way. But, so we just pay him the lease fee, and then you know, the rest of the money is ours to keep, right?
But you're still flipping whether they're in the lease or not.
Yeah.
So
we're getting these five units that are already vacant, we're going after those right away. But then what the plan is, the in-unit ones and the next ones vacant will be the two in the two buildings that we own. Yeah. Ideally, we want to put, you know, the bank's not going to pay for the ones. The bank's not going to contribute at all to the ones that are outside. So that's coming out of our own pocket. Now, once we close and buy those, they'll then reimburse us for all the CapEx. We just keep it, you know, we segregate it out and we can show it. Then they'll reimburse us for that. So that's why we want to get it back to being in the ones that we buy. But we just, again, we don't want to slow down. We want to go with speed. And, you know, we've got the documents in a way, and I've got a good relationship with the guy. But then on top of that, we got the documents in a way where, you know, we've got plenty of time. We've got plenty of runway to make happen what we need to make happen. So,
and I'm sure you're structured in a way that you're kind of locked in on price previous,
it's
obviously,
because
your value is going to go up as soon as you start rotating everything.
Yep. And that's a good point. And that's what I wanted to lock into. And they didn't care. They just want the price that they want. You know, again, they're coming out great because they built them. They've owned them for, you know,
they've made
almost
money.
30 years. Yeah. And you know, they recognize they need a lot of work. There's a lot that needs to go on around there. And, you know, and that's fine. That's the game of real estate. There's a million ways to play the game. So,
that's what I love about it, because, like, no matter what, the deal is unique to every single deal.
Oh, for sure.
Like, there isn't a right or wrong, cut, dry, simple.
Well, and every buyer has a different
desired outcome.
Every seller has a different desired outcome, you know. You know, with these guys, with them selling, like, what part of the flex, part of why they wanted it this way is they don't have one big chunk. They got to go 1031 now. So they want the smaller chunks for us to buy. Cause like the lease portion, they're not having to pay capital gains on that, right? We're leasing
it.
Right. Only the first two buildings. Now the thing with this is, like, it's going all towards the debt, cause the bank's making them pay down the debt first, but then, like, the next two, you know, they could have some 1031 gains, right? Mm-hmm. Now, instead of having a big lump sum, you only have a fraction of that to go invest, right? With a time, cause you got timeline, right? To buy something a little bit smaller, not have to buy something huge. Right. And then we buy the next round, and it's kind of the same thing. So it just gives them a little bit more time, a little bit less pressure, and a little bit more options with their 1031. So when they kind of told me that's what they were kind of looking for, I'm like, okay, well, what about this idea? And I thought about how, because a lot of senior housing is done this way, where someone will develop it, then they will either hold on to that building or they'll sell it. Right. But whoever ends up owning that building, a lot of times they're not the actual operating company that operates the day-to-day senior living, especially if it's like nursing care going on and stuff.
Yep.
They'll actually give a master lease out to somebody else that then is an operator, right? And that master lease says, hey, you're going to pay the landlord this much no matter what. But then you operate in your business, you charge what you want, you're keeping the upside. Or there could be a split, profit split too, or whatever. This stuff happens too a lot of times with, a lot of people don't realize this too, but like in big cities, like in New York City, you know, a lot of people will master lease the building and they'll own the ground and they'll do a master lease where someone else gets to operate the building for 99 years.
Oh, sure.
So, and then once the 99 years is up, goes back, you know, that person could go out and find another person. And so there's a lot of different ways to do real estate that, you know, I tell people this in this area in the Midwest and Wisconsin, like, what are you talking about? But like big city people are like, oh, we do this stuff all the time. Yeah. Different game. So, but again, it's like, you know, again, how can you be creative to find solutions that, you know, work for both sides? It works for us. I mean, we need less money down in the project. We're up front. We can kind of, you know, space it out a little bit. And, yeah. So it'll be a good little deal for everybody.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
So we're excited to get it started. And again, like every deal that we're closing right now too, we're trying to push through and do, you know, get it done faster than the last one.
Right. Right.
Right. And that's why this is the first one where we're like, okay, let's do, it's time to do in unit. You know, I it was always on my list. I wasn't even the one pushing it though. Our VP of ops, he pushed our, you know, our team and me and our CEO and our VP of facilities to, he said, all right, it's time. Let's do it. I'm like, all right, let's do it. Right. And so,
it just comes down to communication and logistics, man. Yeah. You get all your ducks in a row, you get everything laid out ahead of time. Yeah. There's no reason you can't.
The other thing, too, right? So, it makes it, in my mind, it makes it more predictable as well. So, when we go to negotiate with our vendors, say, hey, we can guarantee you this much dollar work of work if you're willing to do vacants and also interior, right? But also, not, and we're also starting to hire for in-house construction team as well. So, like, now we'll never be 100%, I don't think, but that it's more predictable as far as how much dollars worth of work we can have each year and how many dollars worth of supplies that we, so when we go to negotiate with all of our different vendors and when we're building our business, anytime you can predict a little bit more accurately, obviously helps the bottom line and just helps for planning purposes. And you know, when you can take on more roles internally and whatnot, you know?
Yeah.
So
where, obviously you've been at this for a while, you've had a lot of uniquely structured deals, getting into this, what opportunities are there for anyone listening to be able to learn more? How do you, Justin, in your brain, structure the deals? How do you come up with this? Like where is there an opportunity that people can come in and either work with you directly or mentor with you, or is there training or is there online courses?
Yeah. So
what do you have?
We've got our multifamily wealth accelerator that people can become a part of. Right. And with that, they get a ticket to the in-person mastermind. We're having one in March. I'm still working on locking down the dates. It'll be mid-March. It'll be the middle of a week, not during a weekend. I'd like to get people in, you know, during work time, you know, and get them out of their office during working hours, get them off site, get them our place. So it'll be, you know, it'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, middle of March. That's basically a 1.5 to 2 day event. But then on top of that, we have weekly calls every Thursday that they get with those tickets. Right.
Okay.
And that goes for a year. Then we have a online portal that records all those calls. So if they can't make them live, they can still watch them. We have the private Facebook group where they can then leave questions. We can help you underwrite deals. We can help you look at deals. We can help you find the market. We can help you do what we're doing. There's a VIP package that's 10 grand. There's an executive package that's between 5,000 and 7,500 for that, for all of that. And that's, again, year access plus the in-person event. And then with that too, the portal, there's an online, we have an online course that comes with that too. That's self-guided, you know, so you can go at your own pace. Some people knock it out over a weekend because I think it's like 25 to 35 hours of material.
Okay.
Some people knock it out over a weekend. Some people like to do 20 minutes a day, you know, and so they can knock it out, a lot of different mini sessions that you can knock out and go at your own pace. Comes with, you know, we use about 25 to 30 different tools around here, different Excel spreadsheets, Word documents and stuff. It comes with that. You know, we're upgrading our property management company and doing a lot of changes there. So there's gonna be a lot of new material going in there over the next 12 months. That's for sure.
So who would you, like, demographic wise, who would be that I'm brand new, trying to figure out real estate, don't totally understand everything yet, Like, at what level?
Yeah, is the guys in our group, guys and gals in our group right now, they're all the way across the board.
Okay.
I mean, we got people that had never bought a piece of real estate before. We've got people that, it seems like most of the people have got maybe like a duplex or a four unit already, or some single family. That's it, and they were wanting to scale up.
Yeah.
But we've got guys that have 100 to 200 units in the group, you know, and then they're looking to come to get to 1,000, 2,000. Right. We've got people that operate their own real estate, that have their own management company, and we have people that don't and use third party. So we talk a lot about, you know, how to structure it and how to, you know, we talk about a lot about the management end. And even if you don't manage your properties, you still need to manage the manager. So we talk about that and spend time on that. So it's good for anyone. Again, I think the most common person is someone that's already got some type of real estate and they're looking to grow. But we get a handful, you know, 25% of the people that come through don't have no real estate right now. So there's a section of it too. I would say maybe 3% of the entire curriculum is all about personal finances as well, to get your personal finances right. And what I do every single month, what I do every single basically week, month, quarter, year with my personal finances, so that you can be prepped and ready as well for like what the bank's gonna ask you. And like, you already got all that stuff prepped and ready, so you can impress a bank, so you can impress an investor if you need an investor, versus like slamming your head against concrete and going down the route and not having stuff, and then right. you don't look as prepared, which hurts your chances, right? So,
I think we've had a few people on the pod already that's been through it. I know Leonard Shea,
Leonard and Shea have been through it,
right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yep. Leonard and Shea, they're a part of it. And I mean, Shea, he came to the mastermind. He dropped, the $5,000-$6,000 to come to the to the multifamily, you know, Wealth Accelerator Mastermind, and to be a part of the accelerator group. And he has bought somewhere between 60 and 80 units since joining us. He's up to almost 100 units right now. Plus he's got two laundromats that he used. He kind of used my structuring of real estate deals to structure those deals. So, you know, even though we're not talking laundromats, he was able to structure a deal the way that I structure some of my apartments creatively. And a lot of these properties, he's got like no money into. And he owns, he actually doesn't even have any investors. He's got like no investors.
Yeah.
Same thing with Leonard Brady. Leonard goes from being, $60,000 to $90,000 in debt. He was my college football teammate. And he goes from $60,000 to $90,000 in debt back in 2016, 2017-ish. He's got 12 units now, owns 100% himself. He's about to refinance again to be able to go out and buy somewhere between another 8 to 24 units. Again, own it 100% himself. And again, he's not going to have to sell his initial units to get that. He's going to refinance because of what he learned here and take that refinance money, which is tax-free, go buy and double the size of a portfolio. So you're looking at Leonard, 6 months to 12 months from now, we'll be at somewhere between 20 to 36 units probably.
Yeah. While still going to school.
He's going to school.
Working, I believe.
I listened back to that podcast. And yeah. I wanted to be like, I didn't ask him, why the hell are you going back to school? Right. Fuck thing. You need to teach these people, Leonard. So Leonard, if you're listening to this, let me know why you're going back to school. I want to get you back on the podcast and talk about why you're going back to school. So yeah, he's going back to school and still works
still full time.
40, 60 hours a week at a 9 to 5. So, which is awesome. Like, so he's looking at starting his own, getting a first hire and whatnot, cause he's still managing it all himself and doing some remodels, and he has got a contractor now that helps him and whatnot. But yeah, so people have been coming through, George is, I need to get George on the podcast. I should reach out to him. George is like mid-20s. I think he either had a duplex or no real estate before he came part of the group about a year ago. But he closed last year. He closed on a 24 to 36 unit value add deal. So he's going through that, and he's already got rents up 25%. And he's just crushing it, right? So that's the type of thing, And I'm the type of person too. I mean, there's been like one or two pissed off people that'll come. Don't decide not to do anything with it. Yep. It does not for me. Like, here's your money back, right? So it's also risk free for a lot of the people. But a lot of it's crazy how many people come and like, dude, you should have charged me like 10x for this.
Yep.
Or 100x, like it's right. like look at Leonard. Like Leonard's probably spent. Leonard's actually gotten like every program that we have here. So is Eddie. Both those guys, I think, from my book, to other different things that I've offered over the years. And I don't know, maybe spent a total of $8,000 on it. But Leonard he's got 12 units. Eddie's up. Eddie had up to 150 units. He's been selling a lot of stuff off and stacking up his equity to go make his next move. So you look at what they've been able to do with that, and some of the guys are like, man, I would have paid you 100x, 10x what you charged for us to be here.
Yeah, and we were just going over stuff at my company too, and we were analyzing over the last 12 months, we've spent almost $500,000 just on education.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just critical. And, and we've already, by far, gotten our money's worth
for sure.
Easy. It's just one of those things where it's like, you got to do it.
Yep.
Nobody thinks twice about dumping $30,000-$40,000 to go to college and get a degree and then hope you can work in your industry, maybe.
Go and get a English language arts, whatever. And it's like, what are you doing with that?
I don't know, but I needed a degree.
Right.
I needed a degree.
Right. Well, times are changing. So, but yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested, obviously you can hit me up on Instagram. You can shoot me an email, justin@spaldinggroup.com, SpaldingGroup.com. Leave a comment on YouTube, whatever. We can get you more information if you're interested in coming to that, learning more about our programs. We'd love to get you started. And, you know, also with us coming in end of the year, I've got with me right now in my hand, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see it. But I've got with me, it's 1, 2, 3.5, 4 pages long, 4 full pages. And every year what I do, December is really a big time planning month for me. I'm not much of a planner. And so when I say big time, it's really maybe like a total of 8 hours.
One day.
Because I want to go do shit, right? I want to go like do it. I'm not trying to like, I'm all about action and you figure it out. But the reason that like this is really like it's always been important to me, but it's even more important to me now because there's so many moving pieces, right? So what it really boils down to is coming down to I know exactly what my personal finances are pretty much going to look like, and why that's important is because now I know how much surplus that I have at the end of each month and how much is in my bank account. So I know how much money I will put to work.
Sure.
Right. And so it allows me to not end up into a situation where I've got too much money stacked up and now I'm going to have to pay more in taxes, but also puts me in a position where I know not to go over this threshold because I don't want to drop below X in my account to make sure I have something on hand for an extremely rare opportunity, right? So, something like that. So, I don't want to have too much money in my bank account because I'm going to get 5 to 5.5% interest on that in a high interest earning, you know, money market account. But over the next 6 months, 12 months, as rates keep coming down, that's going to keep getting eaten away. So I want to kind of know ahead of time, okay, these are the projects we have refinancing. I got cash coming from there. This is how the monthly cash flow is going to increase. I got cash building up there. This is, you know, other streams of income that we got and what I'm expected to be having going into my bank account each month. Here's the total, the running total each month. Now I know how much I got to play with. I have to go put to work, right? And if I don't go put it to work, again, I'm going to get a lesser return and I'm going to have to pay more in tax,
right?
Right. By continuously buying real estate deals, you know, I've only paid over the last like 10 years, I've maybe paid fed and state income tax 3 or 4 of those years, so the last 10 years, because I play the depreciation game. I've been doing this for a long time.
Right.
And so really what I've got, and this is, we talk a lot about this in, and I share a lot of this stuff and we talk a lot about it in the accelerator. So people that are interested in that, you know, you're going to learn exactly what I do. But on this 4 pages, really the first 3 pages really makes up of our, you know, personal income statement. So on this, I've got, you know, and again, this combines my wife and I. So on this, I've got the salaries that are on here. I've got 1099 income. I've got interest income. So there's notes that I give to my companies. They pay me interest on. I have, again, that money market account, mm-hmm. right? I get interest off that.
So is this over the past 12 months or is this your projection
This is projecting. So what's on here is January through December. It's broken up by year. I've got the annual total in on the right column. And I've got, you know, on the left side, I've got all these different, it's a general ledger, right? So I got all these different categories. So each month it shows how much income we've got coming in. And again, this first part is only active income and interest income.
Right.
So then starting on page 3.5 through 4 is straight up all. So these right here, this right here, I don't know what people can see and can't see, this right here plus this right here are all investments that pay me every single month, right? So this is how you want it to look. Like you want most of your paper to be like that, right? I got a page. So I got 50% of what we're working with here is money that's coming into me each month. There's going to come in, you know, it's not expenses, right? I mean, you know, the expenses start below the yellow here, right? And go go the next full page and half the next page, right? So I've almost got as many investments as I do expense categories, right? So I want to get my money working for me.
Right.
But so the first, you know, there's a basically total income line that includes just basically salaries, 1099 incomes, interest income, and any other forms of non-taxable income, credit card points, stuff like that. Then we've got all of our expenses. Now, expenses on my personal financial is really, I do have a section that's broken out and coded as business expenses because I have a holding company that I own 100% of that. There's business expenses that just flow through that I can't necessarily charge back to one of my businesses, right? So I show it on here, and then I'm still accounting for it, right? So that my accountants can still take it and use it as a tax deduction. But I mean, I've got stuff broken out. So I've got a category of household, and underneath that, we've got like a rent, repairs and maintenance. We've got like clothing, furniture, art, decor, childcare. Money that we're spending on holiday. So, you know, the people that come and decorate our house, self-defense, guns and range time.
Grows every year.
Yeah. Yep. Bank charges, right? I got a line for food, groceries, meal prep service that we use. We've got vehicle expenses, which most of our vehicle expenses are actually in the businesses. So a lot of what's here is more like toys, like the boat. Like I know how much we're spending on boat maintenance, boat storage, you know, boat repairs and maintenance, jet ski insurance. So I got that broken out in here. We've got insurance policies on here that we're paying for personally. We've got pet expenses, how much we spend on their pet food, veterinary services. We've got travel, how much we spend on airfare, hotels, vehicle rentals. Now, a lot of this stuff, what you do after you've been tracking it for a while, it's easy to just, it's pretty consistent, right? It's like clothing. I just add like 3-4% a year, right? And just like inflate number over the past year. So like I've tracked my finances like this since 2000. I can go back to like 2000, like when I was midway through college, so like 2010. Right. And I was using Quicken, a program called Quicken at the time. I had too much data in there. So it like froze. I blew up. So, yeah, because I was using it for too long and it got so complicated. Like the dude's like, yeah, you need to just like move your stuff over to QuickBooks.
Right. Right.
But it's like it's crazy because like as your stuff grows, like my personal stuff now is bigger than my business. My entire business stuff was in 2019. Oh, wow. That's why this thing's like four pages long. Like if people look at it, if you blanked it out, people are like, damn, my business isn't even doing that much. And this is our personal finances.
Right.
Right. So I treat my personal finances like my business finances. Mm-hmm. Right. Every single like, you know, day, week, month, quarter, year, we know what's going on. But that's when you're intentional like that, that's how you're going to see growth, right? You're intentional in that in your business. Why wouldn't you be that way with your personal finances, right? People do this. There's a lot of people that don't do this in their business, but there's a lot of people that do this in their business. But why would they not also just do it for personal finances?
Right.
If you want extraordinary results, you got to be extraordinary. Treat yourself like a business. Other things that we got on here. I mean, we got medical, right? And I track all my medical stuff. We have a high savings or a health savings account. So we have a high deductible health insurance program. And so we have a health savings account. I track all the medical stuff because I have that in a high interest account. And we don't pull anything out of the HSA now to pay for stuff, but we can pay for it later and get reimbursed, basically tax-free. So I track all the medical stuff. I keep all the receipts because one day we're going to call on that money and be able to get a lot of money out tax-free. We got how much we're paying in interest, which there's literally two line items that we pay in interest. We have the boat and one student loan.
Hmm.
That's it. On the personal standpoint, so like I have no personal debt.
Right.
Like people look at the people who look at it like, man, they're like in relation to your net worth, you really don't have that much cash. That's what they used to say. Like, I know, because I'm reinvesting it all. And then they'd be like, man, you guys have no personal debt, like nothing. And so hardly any interest paid on here.
So while you're on that, why not pay off the boat? Why not pay off the student loans?
They're like 3% interest rates. So, you know, and people are like, man, boats don't hold. Some people say boats hold their value. Some people don't. I don't really know. I've never sold a boat. I know that it sucks when it's out of commission. You got to pay someone to come take care of it. So I know, like, at some date, like, am I going to have a maybe, but again, it's like such a small in relative terms to cash flow, net worth, whatever. It's such a small amount that, like, if I had to write a check for it tomorrow, I'd be like, okay, here's a check for it.
Right. But that money's making you more money.
The money's making me more money.
Invested somewhere else than it is.
I'm only paying 3%
right.
on that money, right? Right. On the money that we got personal loans on. And but money can pay me, you know, my money is my,
right.
I've basically doubled every single year. My money basically every single year, the last 12 years. Like every single year has been a double, right? So 100%. Now, that doesn't mean, if I put money into something right now, it doesn't mean it's going to pay me 100% right now. But on average, my net worth's been growing 100, like doubling every year.
Doubling, yeah.
Right, so the more money that I have that I can invest, right? And usually what happens is year one, when I invest something, it's going to pay me 4 to 10% that year.
Okay.
Then it pays me, you know, somewhere between 6 and 12% in year two. But then year 3, 4, 5, whether it's a sale or a refi, whatever, right? Now it's like a 250, 300, 500. I've had
right.
10,000%, 15,000%. I mean, I've gotten into deals that I've owned 72% of for essentially no money. Right. And they've later turned into, you know, $1 million in 36 months, right? So I know, again, I know what I can make on me keeping as much money as possible, which is why doing this planning, also what it gets me to is I know right now, I kind of know what my tax burden could be for the year of 2025 that I have to pay in April of 2026. But if I play the game
right,
I can get enough depreciation and invest enough money. I can get enough depreciation, especially with my boy Trump being in office. Hopefully he brings back the 100% accelerated depreciation, wipe out everything.
Right.
Now I'm actually going to get another, you know, good chunk back that I see takes up four lines right here on state and fed income tax between me and my wife. We're gonna get that money back.
Right.
So we got medical on here, we got, you know, FICA, Medicare. Then I have the business expenses that I keep track of, you know, on here that are just basically belong to me. You know, things that I'm doing that are like continuing education that maybe aren't, I can't really put that into one of our businesses or, you know, whatever. I just don't feel right about doing that, whatever. So that's on here. So then it takes us all the way down to, okay, now I've got like salaries, interest income, 1099 income. I've got expenses. Then that gives me my net income. But then what I have below that is all my investment activities, which now that's money that I've got out going into investments. So I've got a new line down here. Called New Investments Made, right? And so that's, I don't know the LLC name yet, so I can't list it out, but I know I can fill that number in with a negative number because it's money out of my pocket to invest, right? And then that messes with how much is in my bank accounts and how much, you know, money I've got left over. But then all my investments are on here. So it's like, you know, Spalding Equity Fund 7, right? Okay, what's my expected monthly distribution supposed to be, right? We got Spalding Equity Fund 3. Well, that one, there's multiple properties in that one. All of them should be sold by, we've been selling them off. All of them should be sold by June 2025. So that one's anywhere from $3,000 up to $15,000 a month through June, and then it goes to zero. But I'm accounting for that now, so I know when it goes to zero, right? And I know what I got coming in. So then after that, so anything from an investment activity, anything that's coming in is obviously a positive number.
Right.
Anything that's going out to make a new investment is a negative number, right? Until it starts to pay me.
Right.
Right. But then that gives me an adjusted total, like net cash increase or decrease for the month, quarter, year.
Yep.
Right. So then what I have down at the very, very bottom is I got my starting cash amount, which is what it's going to be, pretty close to what it's going to be December 31 or January 1st, my starting cash amount. Then what I do is I add in the net increase cash for period, I'm going to add that number in, right? Now that new number rolls over to the next month. Now if I have another net positive $20,000, $200,000, whatever it is, that gets added in the next month and it just kind of keeps rolling, right? But now there's some months where it's like, here's a month that it's, you know, negative $300,000 because I'm making an investment out of something, right? So it doesn't mean that my net cash for the period is going down $300,000. Right. So I could be writing $1 million check or $700,000 check into something that for that month, my net cash flow is negative $300,000 or, you know, whatever, because it's looking at what cash I got in my pocket.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So then it takes that negative three. Well, what's that impact on my cash line?
Right.
Right. And then again, I got a new cash number that's lower But the next month it goes back up again because of the cash that's added the next month, right? But then by that, I can tell you my starting cash, by the time I'm done with this thing, I'll be pretty close to what my starting cash will be. Like, I'll be able to tell somebody at the end of December here, I'll be able to tell someone, be pretty close to what my cash, what I'll have in cash personally on June 1st of 2025. I'll be able to do that 6 months ahead of time. I could tell you in December.
Right.
Right? Now, usually as the year goes on, it's less and less to have in mind because I'm trying to invest more and more before the end of the new year to, again, get more depreciation, to, again, lower my net income, which we talked about before, because it's that net income up there that you're really taxed on.
Yeah.
So
is this a template, or can we build this in a template?
Yeah, this is a template, and it can be, but it's like, you know, it's kind of a template based on four QuickBooks though, kind of.
Sure.
Right? Because I'm basically extracting this out of QuickBooks. Got it. So I extract out of QuickBooks my 2024 numbers.
Okay.
Then I'm overriding that and basically, okay, saying, okay, this expense column, all these expenses right here, they're going to go up three. Everyone wants to say, hey, we're going to cut this expense with my wife and with what we, like, we're not cutting any expense most likely. So, like, I'm just assuming, okay, all this is going to go up 3%. We had really fun. We had a lot of fun doing this year. So maybe that thing goes up 8%, whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, that's how I handle the expenses. But again, it's because if you don't have anything, you got to be able to start. Because number one, if you don't do anything, you really don't know how much you spend. I mean, I could go back onto the computer and figure out how much my wife spends at Target.
Sure.
Right? With how we have stuff broken out. If you don't know how much you're spending each month, if you don't track your personal finances, you'll be shocked at how much money actually goes where. Because some places you're going to be like, whoa, I thought I spent like no money there and I actually spend a lot of money there. Right? And it just makes you become more aware. But then also, once you kind of have the data, right, now again, you can figure out, it's a little bit easier for you to make a budget too.
Right.
Right. Now, starting out, like when I first started, yeah, I was trying to like cut my expenses everywhere. All my personal expenses, I was trying to just take it to like zero and live on. Like if I would go buy a $6 Jimmy John's sub, I'd get pissed at myself. Be like, that's $18 I don't have 5 years from now.
Right.
That was my mindset. So, and again, we don't spend, I mean, I don't think some people would look at this and be like, dude, you spend way too much money. I don't think we spend that much money. We're able to invest a ton, mm-hmm. you know, we invest a ton, but it's all because of planning. It's all, you know, say what you want about Donald Trump, say what you want about people who are trying to,
right.
You know, dude, that's the point of business is to, in football, you want to allow the other team to score as few points and you want to score as many points as possible because there's a scoreboard and someone wins or loses that game. Like money can help you win or lose at life as far as being able to do things that you want to do. Right. And so if you're not going to pay attention to the scoreboard and try to, you know, score points, right. And try to have more come in and try to limit how much goes out. And the biggest amount that we have go out is taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to worry about, and I used to struggle with this too. Everyone wants to worry about, again, the $6 sub.
Right.
But nobody wants to take the time to be like, wait, how can I pay less in taxes? Which 20%, 30%, 50%, I mean, you know, is tax.
And if you're a straight W-2 employee, man, you're fighting the battle, man. So
But that's where it's even more important is you need to know how much you got to find a way to have more at the end of the month so you can start investing. Because once you start investing, your passive dollars, you have way more tax favorability with passive. And so the more you can build that passive income, the better, because then again, now that passive income is not taxed near the same way. And then if you do it the right way and you're a full-time real estate person and whatnot, now you can even get even more benefits that can offset your W-2 income as well, which is what we've been able to do. So, but again, it comes down to a lot of planning to, you know, being intentional. And I say a lot of planning. It's a lot of planning for me because I'm not a planner. I hate it. I'd rather go do it, right? But for me to spend this one's getting more and more complex, and like all of our businesses have budgets, right? We got 40 LLCs, so like all of those have budgets that then roll up, right? So I got other people doing those, right? I'm not doing those. I got other people doing those that then roll up, and I know how much distribution those are throwing off, and so that's why they're recorded here. Right. But I got to treat myself as a business personally so that I can grow and continue to get passive income to be able to do things I want to do in life. So some people say it's extreme, and I'm like, well, maybe you're just not being extreme enough.
Right. And you're going to get out what you put in.
100%.
Whatever that is.
100%. But this is, for me, like when I look at the number, I'm like, oh, well, actually I have a little bit more than I thought coming out of this investment. I can actually invest a little bit more right here without investor money, right? This is how much I can do.
Right.
Right. If I didn't do this, I wouldn't have been because again, even though how well I know it, if there's still so much going on and, you know, money here, money there, and, it's enlightening for me still, and it's just a really good tool.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's great.
Shout out to Peter, who's been involved in our courses and accelerator and everything as well, because he started doing this, and I get a message from him probably like monthly or quarterly, like, oh, dude, because he's been tracking his personal finances now for like 18 months or 12 months. Like, dude, I never knew this, but he's using it as a tool.
That's awesome.
He's using it as a tool. So like he knows he's timed out. He knows when he's going to have X to be able to go buy X as far as an investment.
Right. Right.
You know, he's paying attention to when his debt comes due so that he can update his personal balance sheet on when a refinance is going to happen. He might have a little bit more cash. He's like, all right, I got to have a deal. I got to make sure I have a deal ready for this date because I'm going to have this check.
Right.
Right. So that's how I am. If I, no matter the check size, like when I get paid a big check from our, like I talked about that fund three, that I'm gonna get some good checks over the next like 5 or 6 months. None of that's being spent. None of that's being spent on any of these expenses I'm talking. All that's getting reinvested.
Right back in.
It's all right back in. Once money's invested, it never is not invested again.
So then how do you do that? So essentially then do you just kind of, obviously you've got, based on your cash flow from investments,
yeah.
Do you, obviously, when you go to sell a property or something like that, you take whatever that margin is or whatever that profit is, and you dump that right back into the next
thing.
Yeah,
so it's a refi or sale, yeah. We do have a new family rule where we are allowed to take 5 to 10% of that now, 10% max,
okay,
and go do something crazy.
Okay.
I don't think I'll actually start hitting that 10% max, but who knows? Maybe we decide to build a house or something at some point. Maybe that's where that comes from,
sure.
10% portion.
Right.
But yeah, 90% plus of a big lump sum is reinvested.
Always back in.
Yeah. And prior to 3 months ago, it was 100% for me.
Right.
100%. But now it's like, I look at it, I'm like 10% again, like the dollar amount. I'm like, I still have this that I can go invest. Right. There's levels to it and it's different. Right. But like there's months where I'm like, ooh, it gets a little tight, you know? And like, there's times I still go to zero in my bank accounts. Right. We've talked about that on here before. Yeah. I mean, there's still plenty of times that we go to zero playing this game and investing and being all in. And so we got to be able to deliver.
Right.
So, and it's cool. Cause we're right now I'm teaching our executives. I'm starting to put them through the accelerator curriculum 30 minutes cool. every Friday.
Sure.
So they're the two VPs and our CEO, they're kind of, I'm starting the ground level and working their way up. So they're going to start to see some of this stuff soon and how intense it is. But they're getting ownership in our deals now. So I want them to be prepped so that now they don't squander what they're going to be getting from those, right? And they're prepped, they're ready, they know how to do it. Man, I'm telling you, you know how to do something, and if you protect it and don't squander it, God all of a sudden just says, here you go.
Right.
But if he knows you're just going to go squander 100% of it and do nothing useful with it, I don't know.
It comes down to stewardship.
For sure, 100%. 100%. And then all of a sudden, like the spigot turns on, and you're like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. Again, for anyone listening, I'm going to highly encourage you go back and listen to episode 1 and 2 specifically, because that's Leonard and Shay. Yeah, Leonard and Shay. And listen to that and listen to their story, because, man, both of them have such a great story about the first time that they came to that mastermind and just what it did for them,
yeah,
where their mindset was ahead of time,
yeah,
what they've done in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Coming out of that has been literally life-changing.
Yep.
You know, and for anyone who's kind of interested in coming to the next one in March, go through those episodes, listen to the episodes. Don't hesitate to email and ask questions and get more information. But
yep. Yeah, we got another guy coming on in January. He played a couple of years in the NFL. He went through, he's a part of our accelerator program. He's got a good business himself. So he'll be on, I think, in January, early February. They're working on having their sixth kid. So he's got you.
Oh my lord.
Sixth or seventh. Yeah, I don't know.
They're my lord.
Just cranking them out and cranking them out. So I think that baby's coming like in January or something. So late December or January. So he'll be here at some point, but he'll be another one that
he'll be here and sleep deprived. Love it.
Yeah. Well, he's used to it. I mean, he's been doing it for, I think the oldest is maybe 10, 12, something like
that. Shut up.
So yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. It's tight.
That's tight.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So, have a Merry Christmas, guys. I love the time in between, you know, leading up to Thanksgiving and in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Some of my favorite time of the year. The weather changes here in Wisconsin, and you know, family's around, and you get to, you know, I do. It is the time that I reflect a lot again, because I think part of it is I'm going through a lot of these budgets and past stuff, and like man, I remember, like, it's a great time to go back and realize everything that I prayed for 6 years ago. 10 years ago, like, all of it's here.
Right.
It's crazy. And like, it allows you to enjoy that a little bit more, but then it also like gets you in a position like, okay, what's next? Right. Like to not just be complacent, like what's next, you know, but, it helps even you out a little bit. At least it helps even me out a little bit between that, those two areas of life. So, have a Merry Christmas. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you. This is actually the last podcast of the year. Probably won't it be? No. We'll have one more.
No, there'll be one more.
One more.
One more. All right. Yeah.
All right. Merry Christmas, everybody. Ho, ho, ho.